A change at the top of one of the largest banks in the world. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with a global perspective on business and the economy. The rarefied world of international banking is getting some new talent. With news, the longtime CEO of Credit Suisse is out. Although the management change was sudden, it hardly comes out of nowhere, given the Swiss bank's struggles in recent years with new regulations that followed the great financial collapse. The BBC's Russell Padmore follows global business from London. Good morning, Russell.
Good morning to David.
So Credit Suisse, what do you think the impetus was for a change at the top?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. Credit Suisse and its other big Swiss rival UBS have very much been in trouble since the regulators have focused in on the fact that they've been helping people evade taxes. Now, Credit Suisse was forced to pay $2.5 billion to settle claims of that sort with the American authorities. Brady Dugan has been under pressure since that happened last year. And effectively, this has been, from his point of view, a problem coming. A lot of shareholders wanted him out. That's what happened.
And Russell, tell me more about the incoming CEO at Credit Suisse. His name is Tidjane Thiam, and he's from Ivory Coast, and he has an interesting resume.
He certainly does. This is a man who's been running an insurance company, Prudential, or as it's affectionately known to British people, the PRU. He's been running Prudential here in the UK since 2009. He is fairly well thought of as the first black man who's been leading one of the big 100 companies quoted at the London Stock Exchange, the first man to break through that barrier. And since 2009, he has effectively led Prudential into a very profitable situation, its share price up threefold since he took over.
But surely at Prudential it was not all clear sailing.
No, David. Tidjane Thiam has made one big key mistake. He tried to get Prudential into a situation it was going to buy the Asia insurance business of the American group AIG. That deal actually fell apart, and that effectively put him in a situation that it showed he was inexperienced at those kind of takeovers. But ultimately, you can see that he is the coming man. He turned around Prudential, made it profitable. Can he do the same for this business? Big Swiss Bank.
The BBC's Russell Padmore in London. Thank you.
David, thanks.
We may soon have the European single currency trading one-to-one with the U.S. dollar. Imagine that. After comments by the outgoing head of the Federal Reserve in Dallas urging higher interest rates soon, dollar investments became more attractive, and the euro is down another 0.9% this morning to $1.07.5. A high dollar makes American goods more expensive to sell overseas and can erode overseas profits for U.S. companies, but it lowers the price of imports. Now let's do the numbers. The FT 100 stock index in London is down 0.2% now. So are Dow, NASDAQ, and S&P futures. When the housing market in the U.S. exploded, the fallout rained particularly hard on a handful of U.S. cities. I'm thinking Las Vegas, Phoenix, Atlanta. Yet over the last year, home prices across the country continued to edge up, leading to some optimism that even hard-hit cities were recovering. But when Marketplace's Noelle King traveled to the suburbs of Atlanta recently, she found a tale of two recoveries.
Give it another 44. Everybody give it another 44. No four, no four. All of them on. Give it another 43, 890. Everybody give it another four. Where anybody else wish to bid to buy?
On the first Tuesday of every month, on the steps of the Fulton County Courthouse in downtown Atlanta, banks auction off foreclosed properties. Last month, there were a few dozen people bidding. Most of them were real estate investors. Benno Rothschild, a lawyer and sometime auction caller, says this is a relatively small crowd.
If you came out here in the midwinter in 2011, the whole steps would be covered. They had to have police out here to keep people, you know, off because they crowded, you know, you couldn't get through the sidewalks. It was so crazy.
To Rothschild, this is evidence that Atlanta is on its way back. Fewer people here means fewer properties for auction, means there have been fewer foreclosures. Jason Neisler was also at the courthouse bidding on potential rental properties. He agreed Atlanta's housing market is on the mend.
It's coming back strongly. I mean, it's huge. I used to buy houses down here for $15,000, $20,000. Those same houses would probably be going to $30,000 to $40,000 or more right now. So it's more than doubled.
Dan Immergluck had trouble believing the narrative that Greater Atlanta is recovering, at least in its entirety. Immergluck is a professor of city and regional planning at Georgia Tech. He studies housing markets. He'd heard a lot about recovery, but what he saw in parts of Atlanta was different.
This crisis has left a lot of these neighborhoods scarred, really pockmarked in some places, other places big swaths of housing that are still vacant.
So he looked at 137 zip codes that make up the sprawling Atlanta metro region. He examined home price estimates on Zillow from 2001 to 2014 and found a very uneven recovery even among neighborhoods that have the same types of housing stock.
These were and still are solidly middle-class neighborhoods.
So what was the primary difference between neighborhoods where housing prices had fully recovered to where they were at the market's peak and those where homes were still only worth about half of what they were before the recession? It was the racial composition of the neighborhood.
The ones that are predominantly white have done quite well and have recovered fully.
Zip codes witnessing only a partial recovery tend to be majority African American and or Hispanic. The housing crash had a racial component. Minorities were more likely than whites to have received subprime loans and more likely to have lost their houses. Immergluck says it appears that recovery has a racial component, too. In Atlanta, I'm Noel King for Marketplace.
Now to making a bit of fun of the buzzwords at the South by Southwest Tech Festival that's getting underway. The Marketplace team is heading to Austin for the interactive part of the festival now. Now, we love South by, but the title of many of the panels tend to be a bit over the top. So our digital team has created a device to generate real-seeming but mock session names. Click the button, you might get something like Big Data Bankruptcy and the Future of Tacos. You can find it at Marketplace.org. I'm David Brancaccio, Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.